to those looking to live outside the box of religious performance and inside the love of an awesome Father, this is the God Journey.
Well, I don't know what it is, but for the past few weeks, the God Journey audience, at least those of you that listen to it, have become quite prolific in your blog postings, your emails to me, your comments, phone calls. It's caught me up in a conversation that I hadn't planned to give this much time to, but it's been good. Every bit of it's been good, and I'm excited about it. As I said to you before, I'm just kind of wandering down this stage of the journey right now. I didn't plan to do a podcast every week. It's just kind of worked out that way because there's been lots to talk about. I've got even more that I'd like to get to today and probably can't get to at all. So we'll see where we end up today. Hi, I'm Wayne Jacobson. And you found your way to the God Journey. And this is just a place where we look to encourage folks that are on a bit of a different journey. They're not just trying to fit into the religious order of the day, but actually trying to find a vibrant and transforming relationship with Jesus out of his love and affection that allows them to live differently in the world. And then to have connections with other folks that are kind of on similar journeys, if possible. And if not, share their life freely with people around them, just however that God provides opportunity to do it. So we like to explore that. Got from this from Chris on the blog and thought I'd make a comment. I said, I have been following the blog and podcast for several years now, but just started to respond to the conversation. I think I'm finally not frozen or stuck. I feel like a fish out of water at times, and then I read and listen to these posts, and I'm encouraged and inspired to realize I'm not the only fish. Chris, that's the main reason Brad and I started the God Journey a number of years ago. We just wanted our conversations about things that we thought other people wanted to talk about, but maybe didn't have people to talk about it with, and encourage them to say, you know what, if you're thinking, man, religious systems just don't work for me anymore, we just didn't want you to think you were apostate. We didn't want people who got alienated from religion to get alienated from God, because they're not the same thing. And I think that's what I found so valuable in my own journey. For me, there was always a difference between what religious activity we were engaged in and who God was really. And at times when those came to conflict with each other, it was easy for me to say, I want to do what I think most pleases God, not what gets everybody else's approval in the club I'm a part of. And yeah, that brought some challenging times, no doubt. And particularly those times when you feel like I'm probably the only person in the world that feels this way. And I think that's a wonderful part of the journey. I'm not opposed to that. I think in those moments, we really learn, are we going to follow God as best our conscience reveals him? Or are we just going to keep doing what we do because other people tell us we should or we must? And I think for people to make that jump is a huge jump that brings with it loads of healing. If you need a lot of other people around you to affirm you doing something a bit different, grateful that you've got the people around you to affirm that or validate that or whatever, but in the long run, God's going to want you to make that jump too. Somewhere, I'm going to follow him. We used to sing that song when I was a kid growing up, though none go with me, still I will follow. And to me, I remember singing it back, just, boy, it touched something deep in my soul. I didn't realize how much of my life I would actually have to do that. If none go with me, still I'm going to follow. But I have no regrets, and Chris, you won't either, and other folks listening in. And like I say, it's great when you get validation, but some of the best stories I hear are people that started on a journey similar to this before even the web was a deal, and getting no feedback from books or articles, obviously not podcasts back in the day, just continued to follow God because of the hunger in their heart and not because other people were giving them kudos or other. And I love that. I think that's also part of the journey. But Chris, I hear you. When you find you're not the only fish flopping in the sand, it's kind of nice to know we don't flop alone and that God's drawing other people in similar ways. And I do. I love the fellowship I get with people on this journey who've been through similar things, seeing similar realities and embracing that together. And then we've got some of these about the podcast specifically. I just thought I would read some of them and comment a bit. Ken said, will Brad ever be back for a program now and then? I know things change and Father is moving on in all of our lives, but oh, how I remember and love all the old places where I met Papa in the past. Oh, I have moved on and I'm finding Papa in new places, but I still have all the memories of the past times. Kind of like going back and looking at old photos of families and friends. Just makes you thankful for the past and yet excited for the future. Guess I'm just saying I would like to fall on you and Brad and give you a holy kiss and say I missed you. Hope you know what I mean. Can I do? I miss Brad, too. I not only miss him on the podcast, we've not even connected for a lunch or dinner. Brad's life has just gone on a business direction that he's very excited about and feels like God's called him to it. And our lives aren't even intersecting at this point. So will Brad ever be back for a program now and then? I'd say I hope so. I hope so. But I don't know that that's what I'm looking for. I think a long time ago, the reason we end up with all the religious tradition we do is because people have this penchant to hold on to something in the past. I think this podcast was far more entertaining when Brad and I were yucking it up here together and playing off each other. And there was a unique chemistry and blessing on our relationship. And it was fun. And I think the entertainment value is pretty high. And with it came a lot of good thoughts that pressed into people's hearts and lives. And that was a season. And fully, we're letting it go. If it comes back, it'll come back by God's design and will, not because we're pining away for it. But as you said, I just kind of want to look back at the old photos. Well, there's 353 some odd podcasts of Brad and I back in the archives, and we're still yucking it up back there for anybody who wants to go back and listen to some of that again and refresh the memories. We probably ought to do a top 10 list someday, just ones that we thought were the most special, just if people want to go back and capture some of that. And I think, honestly, other than the facts going on in our lives, a lot of the content of that was, in fact, timeless. John in Australia wrote this, and I like this, a different view. Just a quick note to say how much I love the current podcast direction. I did used to love it when you and Brad joked around, and you always drew some great insights out of each other, and it would be great to hear Brad again. I'm not really commenting on the fact that Brad's not there. In fact, I miss him. What I love now is the common man is now more involved. I guess the common comment, line helps this a bit. My perception, probably incorrectly, used to be that the focus was more on ex-pastors. You and Brad and your colleagues, which is great if your audience is only pastors or ex-pastors. Don't get me wrong, it's still always great to hear from elder types like Jack Gray. I never wrote you about this, but I used to think sometimes this seems like the institution all over again, in that it's all about leaders and ex-leaders. What about the common man? Do we really believe in the priesthood of all believers? Are we just following ex-leaders now? If everyone who listens to the podcast were all sitting around together, would only ex-leaders be talking? If we were all following God, not men, hadn't we better hear from everyone, not just those who are ex-leaders? This is not meant to criticize anyone at all. I've always loved the podcasts, and they've helped me in immeasurable ways. But I now love them even more because I'm getting the testimonies of people I can relate to, people who have to deal with everyday common issues and have to find God in those moments just like me. Maybe we've all moved on together. It's just so much more encouraging now. John, I've got mixed emotions to this letter. On the one hand, I don't feel like anything other than a common person. When you talk about ex-pastors, ex-leaders, I walked away from that 20 years ago. I don't live my life like an ex-pastor. I don't live my life like a leader. In fact, when I arrive somewhere, my usually first comment somewhere is, I'm Wayne Jacobson, and I'm a brother, and I'm here to be alongside you in this part of the journey. And if you think I'm an expert because I've written a book or do a podcast or whatever, I'm going to disabuse you of that notion just as fast as I can. So I understand this. I understand the whole clergy-laity distinction and how that is synced into our psyches and have this feeling that there's certain common, we called schlubs on a podcast back a ways. There's schlubs who've never been in professional ministry. Then there's professional ministry types. What I'm hoping, what I live for, is that we're all just common people. The folks I have conversations with, whether they're elder types like Jack Gray, whether it was Brad Cummings, that came out of a friendship, not even out of an ex-pastor kind of thing. I know I'm a bit of a, you know, writer, teacher, traveler, commenter type, and I know people kind of think I don't live the common life with the common stresses and strains that other people do, but that's in fact not true. I actually do. The people I talk to live life that way as well, and the conversations I have with all kinds of people, I hope we are, as John writes, I hope we're moving past it. I hope we're moving past the preconception of it, too. I ask all kinds of people to be on this podcast. I'll be honest with you. Over the years, I've probably been turned down by more people who've accepted the opportunity because not everyone's comfortable in front of a microphone, and it's a little bit self-aware. And to be honest with you, I'm not sure it's healthy to be in front of a microphone all the time. So I when people are reticent to do it, I don't press it. It's not my deal to say the best conversations in the world need to happen here. In fact, the best conversations I have aren't usually recorded, unfortunately. I record the ones I think may have some potential to be bigger than just my own interest in it, and that other people would like to listen over my shoulder and hear. And that's kind of what the podcast's about. I just did a couple of interviews, conversations, I guess, with a good brother of mine who's never been in professional ministry. But we're not going to be airing those for a couple of weeks just for some other reasons. But eventually we'll put some of that on. So stuff about money and finances and how that works out in our lives, and a brother with a really interesting story. So we'll get to that sometime. But I'll just say, John, I think it's always been about the common man. I hope it has. I understand when that's hard to see, because you've sat in a pew for years and you get the idea that those guys up front really do live a different life, and they treat us differently than themselves. And particularly when you got green rooms and all that stuff going on, I understand the dichotomy. But I also want to be a vote to say I'm a common man, and I deal with common people. And everybody that's been on this podcast, you know, puts their pants on one leg at a time and deals with all the same real issues of life that other folks do. And hopefully those distinctions just break down. And yeah, just even just because someone's an author or a podcaster or whatever, that we don't give them more weight than the brothers and sisters that are in our lives that God wants to speak to us through as well. And I hope we're learning that, because that really is the priesthood of all believers, and I believe in it. And Alan wrote me this: podcasts are great as usual, but I was listening to the last one. I thought how much more of a conversation it would be if there was someone else in the studio. Boy, I agree with that, because it's just me here sometimes. From my perspective as a listener, it could literally be anyone. It might not be something you're wired to do, but if you were to pick any of the people from the comment section and record a conversation with several of them, it seems you would have some intriguing content. And we might well do that, Alan. I'm looking all the time for where would be an interesting conversation. But I also realize, I mean, I get weekly, I'll get a request from an author with a book, and somebody with a website wants me to do an interview to expose something, or wants me to interview somebody that they love and read and think you guys would be interested in. And I've just always said to people, this has always been a conversation of friends. So one of the things that happened, it's not that people in the blog comment list, whatever, might have some wonderful things to say, but I've done podcasts with strangers, and I just mean strange to me. So we're sitting down, and it just turns out to be an interview, and it turns out to be pretty flat, and it's not a great conversation, because I think conversations come out of relationship. So, yeah, I'm open to having people here. I'm open to some of those relationships growing, even through the comment section. People, I've met a lot of people because I hear things they've said. I happen to be traveling in the area. We get together and meet, and I'm thinking, wow, this would be a fun conversation. So I'm always looking for that. We can do some things with Skype and phone stuff to bring people in. And hopefully we'll do that at some point. I'd love that kind of conversation. I've had people call me and ask, you know, Wayne, or write me an email, Wayne, I'd like to talk about this with you. And I'm thinking, wow, this would be a conversation a lot of people would love to hear. And I'll ask them, do you mind if I tape it? Happy to take the time with you. And because a lot of it's really personal, everybody turns me down. They just say, you know, I just really want to talk to you. Please don't make me. And I don't make anybody record anything, because honestly, even when I travel around, if I'm sitting in a room talking to people and somebody wants to tape it, so they put a tape recorder out on a table where it's obviously, or even worse, videotape it. If you've ever been in those settings, the dynamics of a room change if there's a microphone present. Certain people won't talk. Those who do talk, talk differently. Those with agenda try to get it into the microphone. It just, microphones change the naturalness of conversation. It really takes a gift, and even people who've done podcasts with me say, gosh, that was difficult. It takes a real gift for just to have a I know it looks easy. It's not always easy to just have a real conversation when there's a microphone in your face, or you know you're being recorded. So, Alan, I love the suggestion. I've had some exchange with Alan since. I hope some of that emerges more up the road. But we'll have to see how God does that. I don't have a long-range plan. I'm not trying to make this podcast, more entertaining. In fact, I like the kind of content we've been able to share, getting to read more letters and involve more of some of what you guys are thinking and your stories. I know it's me reading, and that's not as exciting as Brad and I trapping each other into moments of hilarity. But I think there's value in it, and with the email I'm getting and the comments, I'm thinking other people are finding that as well. This is Sue from Australia. And John's letter earlier was from Australia. This is Sue. We've had Kathy from Australia, and it's amazing to me what's going on in Australia. It's amazing how many people are on great journeys, writing me about it, making great observations, and I'm enjoying it. I'll be going there toward the end of April, hanging out a little bit in the Brisbane, Toowoomba area and Kingaroy, and then down in the Melbourne area on this trip. But I'm looking forward to some old friends as well as some new ones to get together with. But this is Sue from Australia. I recently listened to the Great Gathering podcast. I'm amazed at how God has taken my husband and myself on such a similar journey, the one you describe. Our journey out of organized church began many years ago as we began to spend more time with our non-churched friends, ironically, to get them converted and to come to church. And as a result of enjoying these friendships, our friends became curious about God, and so we invited them and some of our neighbors to investigate Christianity with us over a glass of red at our house. That was 2006. We were the only churchgoers and the only quote-unquote Christians. We were hoping that one day at least some of our friends might become members of our church. Well, that hasn't happened, and instead we opted out of the traditional church ourselves. However, each member of the group has come to trust in Jesus and is genuinely seeking to grow more in their faith. We no longer attend church, but our trust in God has grown immensely, and our joy at being part of His plan is indescribable. And even though none of them has been to church as adults, our friends still have many misconceptions about what He requires and expects of us. Man, that has been salted all over the universe, unfortunately. She says, so I'm thinking your Engage videos, by the way, we just put up number two yesterday as this podcast airs. The Engage videos are just my opportunity to kind of do a one-on-one video with people and coach them exploring a relationship with God where God makes Himself known to them instead of them trying to build a relationship with Him. But she said, I'm thinking your Engage videos may also be a great resource in helping our friends to journey with Him rather than just know about Him. This, for me, is the biggest challenge, is we have some very intellectual, scientific, and logical thinkers among them. Each year I ask Father if it's time to stop our weekly discussions, as I'm very aware of the possibility of it becoming a religious activity. But there's a community dimension as well, as a continued hunger to learn and grow closer to God. So this year, we'll continue. Another amazing part of this journey has been how God has provided me with a community since I stopped attending the church. I decided to join the local gym where I came across an old acquaintance. She's a Christian, and her family has just closed their church after 12 years of trying to make it relevant to the community. Boy, that's almost an oxymoronic endeavor, trying to make church life relevant to the community, at least the old way of viewing church life. She had already started inviting people from the gym for coffee, and I was invited. New friendships were born. Our local gym is not only keeping us fit and healthy, but we have a lovely fellowship group, some of whom are Christians and some of whom are not yet on that journey. Our friends have enriched our lives greatly. I'm so grateful to my loving Father for them. I've become more loving, free, less judgmental of others in the process, and I'm enjoying the journey He has for me each day rather than trying to anticipate the end result. Love it, Sue. We talk about the greater gathering community, and then all of us are thinking, well, we got to plan something, do something. It really is responding to what's right in front of you. Who's God given you to love? If there's a reason to connect and have some conversations together, do that. Don't try to start something that smacks of and a religious agenda, because that's going to be the opposite of community. But finding community, even finding friendships with people that are loving, free, less judgmental, even if they're not followers yet, fabulous. Just let your life be salted into other people. God will provide the fellowship you need. You don't have to keep looking for it and trying to create it on your own. But when doors open, embrace it. Take the opportunity and roll with it. And this from Tamara on the blog, not about the God journey per se, but I like what she's challenging here. She said, one thing nags at me when you discuss development of relationships. As humans, we are more likely to gravitate towards people who are more like us and affirm who we are spiritually, economically, and racially. How then do we have relationships with those who do not look like us, talk like us, think like us? While we may agree on the basics of Christianity, we neglect to enter into relationships with folks who are very different. Is this not what Christ exemplified and called us to in our relationships. Dr. Martin Luther King championed the concept of a beloved community. In the beloved community, poverty, and she's quoting, in the beloved community, poverty, hunger, and homelessness will not be tolerated because international standards of human decency will not allow it. Racism and all its forms of discrimination, bigotry, and prejudice will be replaced by an all-inclusive spirit of sisterhood and brotherhood. In the beloved community, international disputes will resolve by peaceful conflict resolution and reconciliation of adversaries instead of military power. Love and trust will triumph over fear and hatred. Peace with justice will prevail over war and military conflict. And then back to Tamara's comment. Seems to me that the concept of the beloved community is scripturally based. Now, before you launch down your little, wow, that's just unreal, idealistic, pie in the sky kind of idealism, let those words sink into your heart. Go back up the podcast if you need to listen to it again. An all-inclusive spirit of brotherhood where international disputes are resolved by peaceful conflict resolution. And let that sink in before you decide it's unrealistic. Is it God's desire that our world come to that place? I think that's very, very clear. Scripture is all about God bringing us to places of peace. And over the course of human history, we continue to move that way to some degree. Now, not in big jumps, certainly, but there's a whole lot less war going on today than any time of human history, even with the situations engaged in the Mideast. I like what she's sharing. Do I think it's realistic of world systems to produce it? I don't. Can we, by being responsible citizens, by the things we write and say and the way we live, can we encourage our cultures to that kind of reality? Yeah, we can. I think whenever you can be a spokesperson for something like that, fabulous. She says this, "Forgive me, but when I listen, I sometimes feel like Wayne's a financially secure white male." The podcast we'll have coming up will kind of talk about financial security. Finance is not my security. So I see financially secure. I get what Tamara's saying, but you know what? Finances have never been secure. And though Sarah and I are in a comfortable spot right now, we've been in places where it's been incredibly tight. But incredibly tight, again, in a white male living in middle-class America, which is not at all tight. You talk about what other cultures deal with around the world. But to beg the point, Wayne is a financially secure white male who has time and space to explore his relationship with Christ without having to deal with issues of racism, poverty, or sexism. And that's true. The vast majority of your guests are white, and to my recollection, I have yet to hear a podcast dealing with racism or inclusivity. And I realize that is not your intent, and in my head, I think maybe you would reply that God will lead us to diverse relationships if we are walking with Him. I just don't see many of my Christian brethren doing that, and I hope that I've not offended you, and I really would like to hear your response, even if I am dead wrong. Well, Tamara, I'm not offended much by anything these days. You know what? I live my life pretty openly, and you get everything I've got, and I'll respond as best I can to what you said. One, I love the hunger of your heart. I do. It reflects mine. I look forward to the day when our society reflects these values better. In the meantime, I look to live the way you're talking about more than I look to get society to conform to me. I think it's true that we as humans are more likely to gravitate towards people who are more like us. That was for your opening comment. And I agree. I think it's true that we tend to gravitate that way. But what I'm finding, as God renews and redeems my heart, I am less likely to gravitate to people who are like me. And I know you don't see all of my relationships. Again, as I said earlier, I can't get everybody on a podcast. There's certain kinds of people that will do podcasting kind of stuff and others don't. But that's beside the point. So I don't think the podcast is a good measure of that. Yes, the culture I swim in is basically a white culture in terms of the publishing industry, in terms of people I meet who are saying things to the body of Christ. I would say predominantly that, but I wouldn't say exclusively that. And it's tough. I think it's tough being a white male in this society of a middle-class variety or even upper middle class, and have a sense that you get where people have been brutalized and hurt by bigotry and prejudice and racism. So I'm not quick to fly over this. When I get emails like this, I'm asking, God, is there something I'm not doing that you want me doing, either in speaking to the culture, because that's a question? Is there people I'm not meeting or engaged with because of their color or because I'm not in places where they are enough to have friendships form? But I don't sit here saying all my relationships or even most of my best ones are people like me. I would say that's not true. Most of my best relationships are with people who are very much unlike me, and I mean that ethnically, economically, politically. While I think it's true that we humans gravitate toward people like us, I don't think it's true that people who are redeemed in Christ gravitate toward people who are like them. So the more I let Jesus love me, the more I see people without those filters, and the more I get to embrace them. And I would say, whether it's me wandering around Kenya or the places I go and visit, when I'm invited to go somewhere, I don't ask what race are you, what economic status are you. I don't ask any of that. It simply is God calling me to this. And I've been in racially diverse situations because of invitations that have come my way. And I'm fine with that. I don't trumpet it because I think that looks self-serving in so many ways. But maybe we don't talk about inclusivity as an issue, whether it's even ageism. I mean, I think even among people in maybe our former days, we ended up a lot with, you know, people, couples with kids our age. That's not true now. We end up with all kinds of people that are close friends of ours of all kinds of ages, married, single, whatever. So I know that's changed for me. My hope is that as people draw closer to Jesus, it will change for them. Do I think our world structures are fair? Do I think we're going to get to peaceful? I mean, I did peaceful resolution stuff with bridge builders for 20 years. I'm phasing that part of my life out now just because I don't have time to do it. And you know what I found about it is there's a certain number of people, and I would say upwards of even 70 to 80% of people would embrace the realities of the beloved community. And that's offset by maybe even 10, 12, 20% of people who are evil, corrupt, and look to exploit everything going on in society for their own gain. There are governments like that. There are nation states like that. We live in a world where to resolve disputes by peaceful conflict resolution, it takes all parties willing to do that. That's the problem with the world systems the way they are. They're designed for the exceptions. They're designed to try to protect against the greedy, the angry, the dishonest. And those are going to be in our culture until this world becomes the kingdom of our Christ and of his God. So I can say that reality. At the same time, I'm saying, yeah, be a voice for that. At the same time, have your eyes open. I mean, we were fixing to help resolve some of the whole intelligent design versus evolution in the public school classroom with a group of educators in Nashville years ago with Bridge Builders. And we got to a resolution that I think virtually 90% of believers in America would have loved. But the Christian groups that were representing you there wouldn't agree to it. And when I asked one of them why, I had lunch with one of them and said, you know what? 90% of what you're asking for is here. And the rest of the other 10% isn't honest anyway. You know, people across America would be thrilled if we could come up with this agreement. Why are you so resistant? This is his answer to me. Wayne, there are 25 organizations that make their income off of the creation evolution fight. If we were to resolve that here today, our organizations would end. Are you ready to accept the responsibility for 250 people being out of a job? In other words, we're profiting from the conflict. Take abortion, for instance. If you take all, if Christians had given early on the idea that we can prevent or should prevent every abortion from occurring because it's murder, and I get the rhetoric of that. I believe the underlying assumption that a fetus is a human life. I do embrace that. But the fight has only allowed abortions to escalate. I don't think anybody I've met in the, maybe a few, but no one I've met in the abortion side of things thinks abortion is a great solution. They think it's a necessary, it's a necessary procedure for women who are going to do it to themselves anyway, or the man's going to kick them in the stomach until they abort. So as a safety protocol. But we have fought over the legality of abortion. Here's what I wonder. What if you took all that money that had been fought over legality and instead said, you know what, let's just keep it legal in America. I know this is going to be controversial. I know people are going to hate me for this. But what if abortions were legal? And what if the anti-abortionists and the pro-abortionists had spent all their money making abortions rare? Because I think that's where we could have agreed. Abortion is a lousy solution, even if you like it. So what if we took all that money we put into the fight over legality and made abortions rare through education, contraception, through all the ways that we could have worked so that women wouldn't be caught in a place where abortion was a solution? But you know, here's the reality. If both those groups would have given up those fights, that money wouldn't have flowed to their organizations. I had a guy that I taught about Bridgman. He's one of the most snarky, take back our schools for God. Christians have to prevail in the school. Everybody got to get out of public schools within 5 years because public schools are making atheists of our children. I mean, he heard a seminar I did on bridge building, loved it, wanted to do it with me. I kind of helped him learn to do it himself. He went out to do it. A couple of things he did that I was really impressed with the direction he headed. And then 6 months later, I got a newsletter from him, and he had totally abandoned it. And it was all back to the anger and rhetoric. And I called him up and I said, "What happened to you?" And he said, "Wayne, gosh, I love bridge building. I love talking about it. I think, but you know, the more I talked about it, the more my income fell. People on my newsletter list, I mean, we bred them for war. They don't want peace. And if peace is coming, they don't give." So I realize our structures are set against what this beloved community is all about. I think the beloved community describes heaven. And I don't think heaven is a future reality. I think it will be a future reality. When Jesus brought the kingdom of heaven here, what he did was open the door for you and I to live in it right here, right now. I can't make the rest of the world live in it, but can I live with resolving disputes by peaceful means? I can. But when someone else drags me to court, I don't have a choice. See, it takes all parties to embrace this reality. It takes parties, and there's a lot of us, I being one of them, I don't have hope that our government can distribute wealth from the rich to the poor in a way that doesn't corrupt the rich, the government, and the poor. I'm all for compassion. I wish we found a better way to do compassion. Our world systems, who claim to be compassionate, oftentimes destroy the very compassion they're talking about because they don't know how to give in a way that doesn't breed dependence. And I think any compassionate give gives a hand up, not a hand out. It's going to equip you. I don't know that government can do it. And when we keep seeing from our government masses of billions of dollars, it gets wasted and spent by the bureaucrats themselves on their own parties for their own amusement. And I guess you can say, well, you're going to have to assume a certain percentage of waste if you're going to have a government. And should our government systems be compassionate? Yes. Yes, I'm for that. I don't think the world system's answers are easy, Tamara. I love the fact that you're asking them. I think the personal answers are a lot easier. Can I live this way? Can I not just hang with my own crowd? And if Jesus, if the purpose of Christ, and this is Ephesians chapter 2, the dividing wall between Jew and Gentile was broken down so that God could have one person, one reality in the world. The work of Christ beginning in Abraham was about, I want to bless you to make you a blessing to all the nations of the world. God's calling in our lives has always been about blessing others. And yet we've all gotten the idea that at the end of the day, God blessing me is all about my privilege. And that erodes the beloved community. That erodes it. I can't make the world around me do what you want, Tamara. I can talk about it more. And again, I don't have an agenda of things I talk about here. I talk about the things that are current in my life. And Tamara, you made this current this week. And I'm grateful that you would write a letter like this and say, what do you think of these things, Wayne? And I'm thought it out a whole lot. I'm just kind of answering off the reality of my own life. I love everything that Martin Luther King described in the beloved community. I have no hope that our world structures can produce this, but I have every desire to be a spokesperson that our society can and must move that way as best it can, and be one who works for that as God gives us grace and calling. But I can in my own life look around and say, gosh, am I surrounded by people that are just like me? And if I am, God, what relationships are you giving me that I'm missing? See, maybe that's where the prayer goes. If I end up with people just like me, then I've got to say, God, I must be missing people you want me to connect to, because Jesus had the desire that in him there'd be neither male nor female, neither bond nor free, neither Jew nor Greek, neither black nor white. I mean, I think in God's reality, we're all just people. And when we find ourselves affirming people like us and avoiding people unlike us. I think the way we treat the elderly in this community, people tell me after the Jack Green interview, man, you just gave me a desire to go talk to some older people and see what they know. I think there's a whole lot of resource being wasted because we're all about entertainment. And so the young, entertaining, charismatic kinds of people who can talk, write books, whatever, that draws our attention. That's not drawing you to the most mature, Christ-transformed people in the world. It will not. So I think we get to ask, God, if I'm finding myself here, where do you ask me to live? If I've got extra resource, which Sarah and I do, where do you want us to give it away? And looking for ways that makes sense in our lives and not just keeping it all in our culture. I love the fact that so many of you and Sarah and I have been involved in giving money to this Kenyan orphans and widows and helping out in that area of the world. And there are people I know. I've been there. So, Tamara, all I'm saying is I love what you're saying. I'm sorry, I guess, if we haven't communicated that as well or as often. It's not on the forefront of my mind. But just like we talked about earlier, I don't think of myself as a common man. I don't think of myself as a white male that only hangs out with white males. But I agree with you. I live in a very white community. That's just true. But I didn't move here for a white community. I moved here because God kind of prepped us to live here. And if he preps us to live somewhere else, I'm all in. But I get it. I love that when Ephesians 2 ends, it talks about the church rising to become a temple in which God dwells by his Spirit. I love that. I love that the community that God has in mind in the earth is exactly what you've described. And it's going to happen in the world to the degree that I let it happen in my life. And I don't live with the angst about trying to, because I see all the intentional racial things that we've done to try to, I see them as all pretty much, again, we're going to use a world system to try and produce something that God produces in the human heart. If it doesn't happen in the human heart, the fact that we've got a system is not going to be helpful. That's not saying the system can't do some good and that God won't be in that, because he often is. But I my hope is I get to live there. I get to live in that reality. I want to live more in it, Tamara, because you brought it up this week. And that's about all the time we've got for this morning. So I got one other thing I want to get to. Tommy, we'll get to yours next time we do it, whether that's after the interviews I've already recorded or before. But thanks for joining me on the God Journey today. I hopefully you got some things to think about. And ask God about and see where He takes you in days to come. If you've got some comments you want to make to us, our comment line is 805-539-6980. It's 805-539-6980. You can comment on the blog as well. And we'll see you next time.
Traveling with us on the God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.